Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans, and we should be. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking climate with Steve Gorham, then Teresa Robinson. We'll discuss female veterans. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Steve Gorham. Steve's the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, so he really understands the whole subject of climate. Our government and the United Nations say that climate change is the biggest threat our world has ever faced. Indeed, our military says it's our biggest military threat. I don't think Steve agrees. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi, Colonel Gillum. Great to join you again.
You know, I've seen all kinds of reports about climate change for decades. And how could climate not change? That's not bad. That's just life. Okay, Steve, give us a little bit about your background and how you got into climate science.
Yeah, it is interesting. Climate, I don't think I have met an informed person who doesn't think the climate changes. The climate is always changing. It's been changing for all of Earth's history. The question is, what is causing it? Whether it is natural factors or man-made factors, or your local power plant or your neighbor's SUV. And as you asked me, how did I get into this? I've been doing this for about 15 years now. I was an out-of-work business executive, decided to march off in a different direction. And since then, I've written 4 books on climate and energy. And I've been on over 400 radio shows and many TV stations as well. I've become a professional public speaker. I speak to industry and to business, utilities, transportation, agriculture, many other groups about energy and climate. And so the big thing is that the world is really off on the wrong track on this. They have decided that climate is the most important problem to be solved when really it's not a problem we can solve. It's something that's dominated by natural factors.
Well, even if there are climate issues, if it gets too cold or too hot, yeah, it's going to change anyway. And and what we do has very little to do with that. Am I right?
Well, that is correct. The proper policy and the only sensible policy with regard to climate is to adapt. Thinking that you can put up wind turbines to stop carbon dioxide emissions, to stop the earth from heating, to stop the ice from melting, to stop the oceans from rising is really a convoluted thing that's not going to have much of an effect. The proper policy is to do what Netherlands has done for centuries. It's to build dikes. It's to build islands. It's to adapt to rising oceans, not to try and stop the oceans from rising. So that is the proper policy. But unfortunately, we have literally thousands of laws now across hundreds of nations that are promoting renewable energy and trying to stop global temperatures from rising. And it's not clear that any of that's going to have any effect.
And what that's really doing is messing up the lives of everybody and the economy and everything else. Where do these ideas, you never know where ideas come from, but there doesn't seem to be any regular science. I mean, according to Al Gore, we're all dead now anyway. There's never been anything forecasted that actually happened, has there been?
Well, there is a history of this. Back in the 1970s and 1980s, a number of computer modelers began to run climate models on supercomputers, and they noticed that carbon dioxide was rising in the atmosphere, and they said this was going to cause dangerous global warming. That's what their models said. In 1988, we had hearings in the Senate in the summer, and Dr. James Hansen of NASA, who is a computer modeler, climate modeler, came forward. He testified he was 99% sure the Earth was warming and humans were causing it. In 1989, the United Nations set up the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And within a year, that group found that humans were causing dangerous warming. And then just a couple of years later at the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit in Brazil, More than 40 nations in the European community signed a treaty saying they would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And for the last 25 years or so, they've been arguing, I guess 35 years, arguing on how much to cut emissions and when to cut those emissions. Yet temperatures are rising very gently. The computer models appear to be wrong. They've exaggerated things. We aren't seeing stronger storms or hurricanes. We're not seeing more droughts or floods. And so it's pretty clear that we're not seeing the disastrous effects that folks have forecasted. But the world kind of jumped to a conclusion on this, and it's still, it's a powerful ideology. I call it climatism, the fear of man-made global warming. And it has still captured most of the political leaders in the world.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking climate with Steve Gorham. And none of the predictions of horrible disasters that I have read about in the last 20 or 30 years have come true. Matter of fact, first it was global cooling, then it's global warming. So then, and to cover it all, they call it climate change. So anything it does proves their point, but you can't stop it from changing. My body changes. I mean, everything in nature changes, doesn't it?
It does. And you're right. There are many, many predictions that were wrong. Former Vice President Al Gore predicted in 2008 that the ice would disappear in the Arctic during the summer by 2014. That hasn't happened. There have been many, many such predictions. And the Earth's climate is always changing, as you say. And just to give you some other examples, and by the way, any heating or cooling or storm is now labeled man-made climate change. An example is what's going on in California. 2 years ago, headlines were that California was in a 100-year climate drought. And then in the last two winters, we've had these atmospheric rivers that have come in off the Pacific Ocean, dumping huge amounts of rain and snow on the state. And now they're saying that those are due to climate change. So 2 years ago, the droughts were due to climate change. And now the very soggy, rainy weather has to be due to climate change as well. And all of these, they say, are forced by your light bulbs or your power plants or your gasoline-powered car rather than what nature does.
Yes, sir. A number of years ago, I was interviewing the Commandant of the Coast Guard, and I was asking him about the polar ice cap shrink, and he pointed out that it was indeed shrinking, but the southern ice cap was growing. So it wasn't global warming, it was regional warming. So that seems to be the case almost everywhere. There's more to discuss about climate change, and Steve is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to do some deep knee bends. Do 40. And do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
The U.S. is more than $32 trillion in debt, a number that is going up by the second.
Meanwhile, our country faces expanding global threats while our military readiness is consumed with unnecessary engagements elsewhere.
If we want to be safe in the future, we need to get our debt and spending under control. Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Steve Gorham about climate or climate change. The military says the climate change is our biggest military threat to our nation. So I think that they want us to now start using electric tanks and electric planes and trucks. I can't imagine that. Does that make any sense to you?
No, it doesn't at all. And unfortunately, the military, well, they're taking the direction from the administration as well, but they have been captured by many of these fears. The Navy, for example, spent about $60 billion to try and do a green fleet, as you may know about. Ray Mabus, the Secretary of Navy back in 2010, said that by 2020, half of the fuel the Navy would use would be from biofuels, green fuels. And so they embarked on these programs and they spent just huge amounts of money trying to mix biofuel in with diesel fuel for ships. It was very expensive and they couldn't get it in ports. There were no facilities when they went overseas. Well, they even did a line of green destroyers that had both electric motors and regular diesel motors, but they found out when they're running on the electric motors, they couldn't keep up with the aircraft carriers. But by 2020, there was only like 0.5% of all the fuel that was being used that came from biofuels. So the Great Green Fleet was a big failure. And they continue to try and do this. But as you say, this is now spread to other branches of the service as well, talking about electric tanks and a lot of other things that clearly would be impossible to use in a battlefield situation. It's very unfortunate. And in any case, it's not going to have a measurable effect on global temperatures anyway. So I think the military needs to get back to common sense energy policy.
Yeah, I see a global warming crisis thing is sort of like a religion. It's not. I am a committed Christian, and you can come up with all the facts you want. You're not going to change my life. I still believe in God. And I think this is another religion. At least they act like it. Am I close to right?
Well, I hate to kind of disparage religion with this. I like to call it a superstition and an ideology. But I do think that nature controls global temperatures, which is another way of saying the Lord God does. And humans are not in control of that, at least not at this point. The theory of man-made warming is plausible. But when you break it down and you look at the greenhouse effect and all its parts, you see that nature dominates. And again, we have not, the record doesn't show we're having more storms globally or stronger storms globally or more droughts and floods. These things have all been seen in the past. And it's just part of our natural climate. We need to adapt to climate change and not think at this point we can control global temperatures.
I agree. And is there anything going on that says electric vehicles make any sense? I mean, most of the car dealers or manufacturers that have made electric vehicles have stopped making them because there's no demand.
Yeah, they've hit a speed bump. Well, EVs are continuing to penetrate world markets. Last year, they were about 16% of light vehicle sales globally. But they have kind of hit a speed bump. I think in many areas, the people that wanted one for a second car, that cool Tesla, have purchased one. But Ford and GM are dialing back their efforts. Ford was losing about $60,000 in EV. Very, very financially a catastrophe for them last year. We have Hertz that has said that they're going to return, and they are returning about a third of their electric vehicle fleet for a couple reasons. One was when these got into collisions, the costs were very high. In some cases, you had to replace a battery if the battery was even slightly damaged. It can cost $20,000 an electric vehicle, very expensive. But I think another thing was that people just didn't want to come rent an electric vehicle, most of the population. And then in Chicago, we had this public spectacle of that made the national news of people pushing around electric vehicles when it was zero or 10 degrees and trying to get them charged. And by the way, you're not supposed to be running the heater while you're charging them. So people were sitting there freezing, couldn't get them to charge. And there's a new saying in Chicago about electric vehicles. Bit of a quip. It says that 90% of all electric vehicles ever manufactured are still on the road. And 10% of them have made it home. So it is an issue. And again, I'm not against electric vehicles, but the idea that if we all drive them, we'll stop the oceans from rising. That's where we've really gone off base.
Yeah, there's nothing evil about them. It's just that they don't do anything for the climate. That's the point, right?
Right.
Okay. You've talked to this a little bit, but this coming green breakdown.
Yeah.
Where's that going to happen?
Well, that's the title of my latest book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. The world today is pushing for, at least the wealthy nations of the world, are pushing for a thing called net zero. That's the United States, Europe, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and a few others, with the idea that we get rid of all coal, oil, and natural gas by 2050, and we capture whatever carbon dioxide emissions that we can't eliminate. And that's how we solve climate change. But that's beyond a reach out goal. It's an impossibility. It's never going to happen. What it is going to do, this push for net zero, is raise electricity and energy prices. It's going to cause electricity blackouts. It's going to take away people's choice for vehicles and for home appliances. And it's going to cause energy shocks like Europe has seen in the last couple of years. So eventually people are going to push back and this whole system is going to break down.
Yes, sir. I sincerely hope so. It doesn't seem to be taking us in a direction that makes any sense. This is Colonel Denny Gilman, Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking climate with Steve Gorham. Steve, talk to us right now about your book. I got a funny feeling there's going to be a lot of people interested in following up on your thoughts, and that's probably a good way to do that.
Okay. Yeah, the book is a complete discussion of the energy transition. First, a history of energy, and then it talks about utilities and home appliances, electric vehicles, heavy industry, talks about ships, planes. There's some stuff in there about the military as well. And then about the energy crisis in Europe over the last couple of years. So it's a complete discussion of this push to get to net zero and why it isn't going to happen. But I think we're seeing the early signs of a breakdown. We've seen the EV speed bump. We are seeing stock prices that have been falling the last 3 years for renewable energy companies. We're seeing a wind turbine projects off the East Coast, about half of them have been canceled. And so I was expecting this to take a couple decades, but we're seeing some early signs that the world is going to forego this and get back to what makes sense.
Well, Lord knows we certainly need that. We got a couple of minutes. Wrap up your thoughts. What key things would you like everybody to take away from our conversation today?
So I do think it's important for people to educate themselves. If you hear something in the press about climate change, it is most likely wrong. It'll be saying storms are getting stronger or this is the hottest time ever, which isn't true. We've had many hotter periods in the past. And so people need to go a little bit further. They need either read this book. I have another good book called The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism. If you have students in school, they're getting pretty much a one-sided thing that humans are causing climate change and we have to solve it, which again isn't true. But The Mad, Mad, Mad World for about eighth grade and up will give people the real story on climate. And so these are important things for people to read. And then you need to take it to your political leaders and say, why do you want to raise our energy prices? Why do I have to build a wind system next to my home here or the solar system next to my agricultural field? We need to push back on people and try and get back to what makes sense, which is a low-cost, reliable energy. And that's where people are going to be headed.
Yes, sir. And given the fact that China and India aren't playing this game, I'm not sure what all it would lead to. Final question. Talk to us about the Climate Science Coalition of America. How can people plug into that?
Well, that's really just a small group. I'm the head of it. It is part of the International Climate Science Coalition, which is headquartered in Canada and has branches in New Zealand and Australia. But they can go to my website, stevegorham.com, and look for my books. I will send them signed copies. They're also available and on Amazon, and their eBooks as well. By the way, these are fun. They're color paperbacks, and they're full of crazy sidebars of things like the professor in Sweden that wants everybody to start eating human flesh to control global warming. So there's a lot of crazy stuff out there.
There is indeed. Steve, thank you. Thank you for sharing this important information, and thank you for serving our nation by sharing the truth. I'm proud that we're friends and can talk to each other.
Thank you, Dennis.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss female veterans with Teresa Robinson. We'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm and take a break for stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HealthVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HealthVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HealthVet.net. Visit HealthVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Groups, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it's time to discuss women veterans. So, of course, we're joined by Teresa Robinson. Welcome, sister. Glad you could join us again.
Thank you so much, Danny. I appreciate you inviting me.
Teresa, begin by giving us a quick review of your time in uniform, then introduce Vicky Sue, our guest.
I'm happy to do that. I am Teresa Robinson. I served in the United States Navy, 74 to 76. My time was much like everybody else's time that served in the Navy at that time, if you were a female veteran. I served at VF 124, NAS Miramar. We had the F-14 Tomcat. Most of my time in the military was very good, very inspirational, and a great period of growth for me. There were some times that were not. And I think that's why we're here talking about female veterans and how their experiences sometimes differ from our male counterparts, and also to bring awareness to the general public that we are veterans too. She is a veteran. And today I am so proud to introduce this phenomenal veteran, Vicky Sue Condon, who served in the United States Navy for two different stints. She'll tell us about that. And Vicky Sue, I just would like to welcome you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Yeah, I lived in a small town, a small farm. My parents worked in factories, and I wanted to get out and see the world. I knew I couldn't afford college. So my father was in the Navy. So because I wanted to see the world, I'd gone down to the recruiting station, and I really wanted Air Force first. But they were only taking nurses, and I'm not a nurse type. So next door was the Navy. And so I joined the Navy, and I was working in a factory. And of course, that was during the freeze with Reagan. So, you know, there was no chance of making more money. You were like pretty much minimum wage. So I ended up leaving on December 10th and went to Bainbridge, Maryland. That's where the women's boot camp was. And we were pretty isolated. There was no skylarking. We were not allowed to look at men. We were treated as ladies, and we were to behave like ladies. First time I'd ever seen a floor polisher. And I can still, to this day, strip and wax the floor for inspection.
Oh, the skills that we learned in the military.
Absolutely.
Did you serve for 4 years then?
No, women at that time was a 3-year contract.
Okay.
So I was able to get an A school right at Bainbridge, so I became a radioman. And I was stationed at Naval Investigative Headquarters in Washington, D.C. And you can take 3 guesses of my number one show.
NIS?
Yeah. But back then it was NIS, and then they changed it to NCIS.
Explain that, please.
Naval Investigative Service. We were under Naval Intelligence Command. Well, then later on, they changed it to Naval Criminal Investigative Service. So I still have my mug that I received when I left the command that said NIS, HQ. So during that time in Washington, D.C., I got married, and I had an instant family with 5 stepchildren. Silly me, and women were not allowed to have dependents. I had gotten orders for Guam because I had extended for 3 years. My first 3 years was about to expire. And so they had to walk me through with paperwork so they did not have to prorate my bonus. So I got out of the Navy, became an instant mother, and then went back as a civilian to the Naval Investigative Service. And that's when Freedom of Information Act was quite popular. They were doing lots of investigating and everything during that time. Well, then my marriage kind of went down the tubes and I got divorced and I missed the Navy family. So I joined the reserves and I was stationed, I believe it was Anacostia. And I can't remember what I was part of. I just knew I went to Anacostia one weekend a month, and I don't even remember what I did for my 2 weeks. Well, then I had gone to computer school, and I got transferred to a civilian company out in California, and I was at Moffett Field during my 2 weeks, during my drilling there. But I worked a good salary in the computer field, and then one weekend a month, I did my drills.
Vicki Sue, would you say that the military offered you the opportunity for a great education?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it sounds like you learned the skill of radioman, you learned computer skills, it helped get you jobs.
Well, the GI Bill for Vietnam, during Vietnam, was you got so much money per child. So a lot of people from Vietnam, if they had families, I had five stepchildren, so I got money for each of those children
for education.
Yeah. So I went to Northern Virginia Community College, and then I was going to go on to George Washington University. Well, the first class I got was calculus. And it's like, oops, nope, sorry. That was not what I expected. So I didn't.
Not a great way to start at all.
No. Math and I didn't always get along.
So I hear you saying that the military was a good choice for you, but while you were
out of a small town, I got to see the world.
Right. While you were in the military, do you think that you were treated equal as your male counterparts that you served with?
For the most part, yes. There was one comment when I worked at Naval Investigative Service, and in the radio room, we worked 2-2-2-80, which was, you worked two midnight shifts, and on the second midnight shift, you went home, you had 8 hours, and you came back on the mid shift, which was 11-3. You worked two of those mid shifts, and then on the second day, you got off at 3 o'clock, got off at 11 o'clock, and then you had 72 hours off, which was a little bit longer than a full weekend. So you got compensated that way, but when you're working three shifts in 1 week, when you're young, it's okay. But I swore that when I got out of the Navy, I would not work anything that worked second or third shift.
Having had a distinct opportunity to have served 1971 to 1974, have a gap, and then have served in 1981, 1998, did you see a difference by 1981, 1998, in that time frame, they were putting females aboard ships by that time?
Yes, yes. The comfort ships, which were the supply ships, the refrigerated ships that sent supplies out, the hospital ships, that's where the women first started. Well, by the time I got my 20 years in, women were pretty much everywhere, except they were not on destroyers or subs. But since that time, that's all changed.
You think that was a good thing?
Oh, absolutely. It's the best decision I ever made in my life, because it opened up my eyes to the world. I spent 2 weeks, about 4 or 5 days in the Philippines.
Do you think it's a good thing for women to be aboard ship?
I think now, I talked with several women who went to boot camp where I did, when we get to our reunions, that they were some of the first women on ships. And they were tough women. They didn't put up with no crap. And I think that's the thing, that we kind of stood up for each other and protected each other.
It was our predecessors that paved every step of the way for females in the military.
Absolutely,
today.
Yes.
And Vicki,
even women before us.
Vicki Sue, I appreciate you being here today with us. It's always good to see through the eyes of someone different other than a man, to see through the eyes of someone different what the military was like. And you gave us a glimpse of what the Navy was like for you.
Mm-hmm. But it was different for everybody. But then what they took from that experience is so varied.
Indeed. Thank you, Vicky Souf. Thanks for taking time to join us today, and thank you for your service to our nation.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Teresa, for bringing another great female guest to our show.
Denny, it was my pleasure. I appreciate being able to do this.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag, then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your ranger ready, then stand at ease. In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Hey, I do a bit of coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver or gold. Go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook or call in. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Dan from Maryland, he's not a military vet, but he watches the show every week. He loves it, and he especially loves what we do with Armed American, Self-Defense Report.
Well, good. Dan, we definitely think we Americans should be armed and trained. That's really important. I think that's our only one for this week, isn't it, Skip?
Yes, it is, Colonel.
Okay, now it's time for military history. What's the first one?
Well, on 11 March 1779, during the Revolutionary War, Congress established the Army Corps of Engineers to help plan, design, and prepare environmental and structural facilities for the Army. Made up of civilian workers, members of the Continental Army, and French officers, the Army Corps of Engineers played an essential role in the critical Revolutionary War battles at Bunker Hill, Saratoga, and Yorktown. The members of the Corps who had joined at the time of its founding in 1779 left the Army with their fellow veterans at the end of the war for independence. In 1794, Congress created a Corps of Artillerists and Engineers to serve the same purpose under the new federal government. The Corps of Engineers itself was reestablished as an enduring division of the federal government in 1802.
In 1802 was the year that West Point was established, and everybody had to be an engineering major. It's not true anymore, but it was while I was a cadet in the 1960s. Okay, on 15 March 1781, during our Revolutionary War, in the Battle of Guilford Courthouse, North Carolina, British General Cornwallis achieved a Pyrrhic victory over American forces of Generals Greene and Morgan. Cornwallis suffered severe losses that he abandoned his campaign to establish British control over the Carolinas. It was the largest, most hotly contested action of the Revolutionary War's climactic Southern campaign. Major General Nathan Greene and his army of 4,400 Americans contested the British invasion of North Carolina at Guilford Courthouse. Lieutenant General Charles Earl Cornwallis commanded the tough professional force of 1,900 British soldiers. Greene deployed his men to smaller groups to take advantage of the terrain. The courthouse battle was fierce. The veteran British troops were severely crippled. Cornwallis lost a quarter of his army and almost a third of his officers. Greene lost only 6% of his men. With greatly diminished ranks and depleted supplies, Cornwallis withdrew to the coast 200 miles away.
And on 12 March 1824, Marines of the Boston Barracks quelled a Massachusetts state prison riot. Inmates rioted and holed up in the mess hall with a guard as hostage. Marines from the Boston Barracks came to help. Major R.D. Wainwright led 30 Marines into the mess hall to confront 283 armed and determined prisoners. Wainwright ordered his men to cock and level their muskets. Quote, "You must leave this hall," he told the inmates. "I give you 3 minutes to decide. If at the end of that time a man remains, he will be shot dead. I speak no more," unquote. In 2.5 minutes, the hall was cleared as if by magic, Colonel.
Skip, as a Marine, does that make sense to you?
It makes total sense. Human nature. You want to survive.
Amen. And on the 15th of March, 1916, General Pershing and his 15,000 troops chased Pancho Villa into Mexico. U.S. troops pursued the guerrillas, killing 50 in U.S. soil and 70 more in Mexico. General Pershing failed in his goal to capture Villa dead or alive. Villa was assassinated in Parral in 1923.
And on 15 March 1919, the American Legion was founded in Paris by 1,000 veterans of the American Expeditionary Force who met to discuss transition to civilian life and what veterans could do to help each other adjust and to work together to further the rights of veterans.
And they're still doing it. And on the 11th of March 1942, during World War II, after struggling against great odds to save the Philippines from Japanese conquest, General Douglas MacArthur left the island fortress of Corregidor under orders from President Franklin Roosevelt. Left behind at Corregidor and on the Bataan Peninsula were 90,000 American and Filipino troops who, lacking food, supplies, and support, would soon succumb to the Japanese offensive.
And on 13 March 1942, the Quartermaster Corps of the U.S. Army began training dogs for the newly established War Dog Program, or Canine Corps. Well over a million dogs served on both sides during World War I, carrying messages along the complex network of trenches and providing some measure of psychological comfort to the soldiers. The most famous dog to emerge from the war was Rin Tin Tin, an abandoned puppy of German war dogs found in France in 1918 and taken to the United States, where he made his film debut in the 1922 silent film, The Man from Hell's River. As the first bona fide animal movie star, Rin Tin Tin made the little-known German Shepherd breed famous across the country. Training dogs for military purposes was largely abandoned after World War I. When we entered World War II, the American Kennel Association and a group called Dogs for Defense began a movement to mobilize dog owners to donate healthy and capable animals to our Army's Quartermaster Corps. Training began in March 1942. They were given the task of training dogs for the Navy, Marines, and Coast Guard as well. The Canine Corps initially accepted over 30 breeds of dogs, but the list was soon narrowed to 7. German Shepherds, Belgian Sheepdogs, Doberman Pinschers, Collies, Siberian Huskies, Malamutes, and Eskimo dogs. Members of the Canine Corps were trained for 8 to 12 weeks. After basic obedience training, they were sent through one of four specialized programs to prepare them for work as sentry dogs, scout or patrol dogs, messenger dogs, or mine detection dogs. In active combat duty, scout dogs proved especially essential by alerting patrols to the approach of the enemy and preventing surprise attacks. Colonel, awesome. I don't think I'd want to be a mine detection dog. That doesn't sound appealing to me.
Amen, brother. I felt the same way. And on the 14th of March, 1947, Ensign John W. Lee became the first African-American officer commissioned in the regular Navy. He was assigned to the USS Kearsarge.
And on 13 March 1969 in Vietnam, Navy Lieutenant John Kerry rescued Jim Rassman on the Bay Hap River while under Viet Cong fire and was decorated for heroism. Further investigation showed that there was no enemy fire.
Oops. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for a self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a 73-year-old Florida man was looking for romance and found it at a bar late one night with a 34-year-old blonde. Or at least he thought he'd found love. The man followed the young woman to her home, where he was then attacked by the young woman's ex-boyfriend and beaten severely and then robbed. The elderly man survived the attack and took himself to the hospital. He was treated for numerous injuries to his head, torso, and arms, with a significant lacerations to the head that required staples and his eye swollen shut. The robbers were charged with robbery with a weapon and aggravated battery on a victim over the age of 65. I didn't know there was an age where it was more of a crime to attack someone.
Well, Colonel, there's an old song from the 60s, Love Hurts.
Yeah.
All right, Colonel. When I first read this article, I thought, how could this man be so stupid? But then I got to thinking about it, and I understood. A man's ego doesn't go away just because he gets old, and neither does his sex drive. It may lessen with time, but it doesn't go away. The 34-year-old woman and her 33-year-old ex-boyfriend are clearly the bad guys in this case. However, A 73-year-old victim certainly isn't a hero either. You would think that a 73-year-old man would have more sense than to follow a stranger home at 3 a.m., but apparently not everyone gets wiser with age and experience. Why did he do it? Well, first and foremost, he wanted to engage in sexual immorality with a woman 40 years younger than himself. It was just plain old-fashioned lust. It's the age-old plot line that goes back as far as recorded time. Second, it was his ego. Many men like to think that young, beautiful women are attracted to them, but this man wasn't living in reality. Your ego doesn't erase the wrinkles on your face, nor does it soothe your feeble joints and fading muscles. Here's my advice to men like this. Allow yourself to age gracefully. Don't engage in wild fantasies with women the age of your granddaughter. She's using your sex drive and your inflated ego as a weapon against you. Here's a good guide to follow, no matter what your age is. If it seems too good to be true, then it's probably false. This man was stupid, and he paid the price for his foolishness. Frontlines of Freedom sincerely hopes this elderly gentleman learns from his encounter and stops his foolish behavior. And one more piece of sage wisdom to old men tempted by young women. Hold on to your dignity and self-respect. Because, unlike fleeting youth and vitality, dignity is the one thing you can take with you well into your old age.
Well said, bro. Our movie of the month is No Borrower. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's quite a movie. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Mike Fulgen from the Universal Coin and Bullion will discuss, among other things, gold. Then Mike Kimmage will present his book, Collision. It's about Ukraine. And Gil and Skip will discuss the border and a book. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.